drug addiction. International terrorism.
Freeway killer.
Now, more than ever,
it is important to remember the true meaning of Christmas.
Don't miss Charles Dickens' immortal classic, Scrooge. Your life might just depend on it.
Not bad, huh?
Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast, Christmas Cheer Edition for 2020. So that means probably not very Christmas cheery. But in our attempt to fight it, I'm joined once again by...
Just Jamie.
And together, we're going to try to navigate several holiday-themed topics for your seasonal enjoyment.
Yep.
To that end, we're going to attempt to present a stuffed stocking full of various Christmas memories and favorite items. But first, let me ask you, how have you been able to maintain the festive spirit in this age of the pandemic and the nearly ended year from Hades?
Well, you know, it's a lot of the normal stuff. We went and got our tree, trudged up in the woods. Did a, you know, U-cut Christmas tree, put it up, decorated the house, and...
Ooh, old school.
You know, got it all yuled. we just sat down a couple nights ago, sat down with the kids and watched a Netflix original, The Christmas Chronicles 2 with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn, which was okay. It's cheesy. It's kind of a cheesy, corny Christmas movie, but it's fun. It's good enough.
How does it compare to the original?
And then, how does it compare? Well, it's a lot different. It's a little bit more fantasy-based, and it's fun. They're both fun movies. You know, they're not going to go... I don't know that they're ever going to become, you know, Christmas classics or anything like that, but they're harmless.
Fair enough.
And then one thing that popped up, it's not holiday-specific, but, you know, you can't help but talk about it on a podcast like this, which is we... finished watching the second season of The Mandalorian. And I know that, again, this episode's not meant to get down, go down into a rabbit hole on Star Wars either, but obviously there's a lot to talk about in terms of that show.
I look for us to discuss it at length in a future episode. But for now...
Fair enough.
I assume your household's reaction was generally positive?
Yes, yeah, positive reactions all around. I am in a better place with Star Wars as a franchise than I've been in a long time. And I am really ready for what comes next and all these plans that they have. And this also comes along with I personally finished watching the Clone Wars TV show. I never did watch the last season of that when they put it out on Disney Plus. And... the last third of that last season of the Clone Wars show was absolutely unbelievably good. And
Right. What
the Mandalorian seems to be doing against all odds is tying together all of this lore from the movies, little bits and pieces from comics and books. And it seems to be tying in the Clone Wars heavily. And there's also clues that it'll be tying in the Rebels animated show, which I have not watched and I do plan to. And so I have to give The Mandalorian credit for that too, because it seems to be about as well as anybody could have expected, maybe even better than anybody could have expected, in my opinion, tying all of those threads together. So because of that, and because The Clone Wars was so good at the end of that show's run, I'm very excited to see some of the things that are coming. So I'm just in generally a good place with Star Wars, and it feels good to feel that way about it.
Yeah, it's almost like coherent and cohesive storytelling was the way to go all along. Who'd have thunk it?
So, enough about me. What about you?
Well, I did everything you said, minus anything involving leaving the house or physical activity of any kind. I have been spending most of my time, honestly, in front of the TV. And mainly the only holiday things I've been able to watch so far are kind of old TV episodes that, you know, had Christmas specials and whatnot of existing right. shows, not like standalone specials. Things like the, you know, couple Knight Riders and Magnum PIs and things like that. And I revisited Eight Crazy Nights, the Adam Sandler cartoon, very recently. And we expressed this off the air, but I said that I felt like it was really impressive how modern the animation still seems, despite the fact that I think that came out in like 03, 02, 03.
Right.
So pushing 20 years ago. But yeah, it's still, I think it's still really well done. I think it's one of the most well-balanced, tonally, Adam Sandler projects.
well, some of those are a low bar.
Exactly.
Not all of them.
I think it's probably in the top five as far wow. as... it's obviously going to dip its toe into crude humor and, you know, really low-hanging fruit jokes, but I feel like it doesn't rely on that. It's still very... It's telling, you know, like most... holiday entertainment, it's telling a heartwarming tale, and I think it's all balanced really well, and there's actually several pretty decent songs in it too.
I haven't seen this movie. I think I've seen it once, probably close to 15 years ago, and I also mentioned this off the air, and I've never really even considered going back to it, and it hasn't stayed fresh in my mind at all. I barely remember it at all, but just based on what you've said so far and what you had said previously, I'm gonna have to seek it out.
Yeah, I think it's worth it. I don't know what made me, it came up, I don't know, in a search or something, but I took a chance and it paid off. The
algorithm served you.
Yeah, uh-oh. Don't let them hear that. Because they are listening, just like Santa himself. Well, before he has a chance to check his list, even once, let alone twice, let's go to our own Christmas list here on the show. And that means it's time once again for...
3, 2, 1! Pah!
That's right. It's been a while, maybe even since last Christmas, but 3, 2, 1 Pop is, of course, the part of the show where we take 3 pop culture headlines and rank them as we see fit. However, in the Christmas version... we take 3 Christmas things and rank them as we see fit, because it's very different. and this time, we're ranking 3 of what we consider to be the best special effects moments from Christmas movies and entertainment over the years. Yes, that's right. Christmas special effects. So let's get started. Jamie, please let us know what you have for number 3.
Sure thing. Okay, so my first choice is from a movie that was produced by Walt Disney Pictures and distributed by Buena Vista, came out in 2006, and that is The Santa Claus 3.
This holiday season, the battle for Christmas begins.
You hit me with a shovel!
Santa Claus 3, The Escape Clause. PG,
now play. That's right. Yeah, even the most recent Santa Claus movie is nearly 20 years old at this point.
Wow.
those movies are full of special effects. We all know that. The specific special effect in this movie is actually a practical effect, and that is the suit that Tim Allen wears as the artificially created Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think that the performance as this weird synthetic Santa Claus is good and interesting. But the suit's really weird and different. It reminds me of those, there was an advertising campaign in the 90s with battery-powered human beings.
Right, the Putterman family, if I'm not mistaken. Let's take a listen.
So, is everybody using Duracell batteries?
You kidding? The second I heard they had a battery that lasts all other brands, I bought the family a whole case.
Reminds me of the first time we tried Duracell batteries. We were living in Tulsa with your great aunt Emma. We shared a one-room apartment!
Herb, did you slip her one of those other batteries?
Me?
The copper top. Tops them all.
It reminds me of that. It's very sort of plasticky and waxy and generally well pulled off, and I've always got a kick out of it. Surprisingly, this movie has the lowest budget of any of the 3 Santa Claus movies, coming in at just $12 million.
Hmm.
That kind of shocked me, considering that not only do you have Tim Allen, but you also have Martin Short in the cast as Jack Frost.
Right.
So that was a little bit of a surprise to me. So a limited budget, but a well pulled off special effect in terms of this practical suit that he wears, which was done by Tippett Studios. So it's always something that I've got a kick out of.
Indeed. Coming in at number three for me is a little movie released by Paramount Pictures in 1988 called Scrooged.
This year, Paramount Pictures wishes you a hilarious holiday season as Bill Murray gets Scrooged.
Oh, I'm having the weirdest day!
Scrooged.
Bah humbug.
Now play.
It is, of course, a Bill Murray vehicle, the modern-day retelling of A Christmas Carol. Directed by famed Superman and Lethal Weapon director Richard Donner.
Wow.
A hearty budget for the day of $32 million.
Wow.
And I think it's fair to say that they really made the most of it. I don't know if it's a coincidence because it involves Bill Murray again, but it's a lot like Ghostbusters in the approach to the effects. They're both, I guess, comedies at their heart, but the effects in both movies are just very seriously approached, very, like, straight horror movie level effects. And that helps, I think, ground and kind of give some sort of backbone, if you will, to the otherwise, like, over-the-top fantasy of the movies. And my favorite effect from Scrooge is the character Lou Hayward, which is essentially the Jacob Marley equivalent for this story. And he is, I think he's technically supposed to be a mummy. Like, they, you know, you see the Jacob Marley in, like, the Disney cartoon where it's goofy and it's just kind of a ghost of the regular guy. And yeah, that's kind of the right, same way right. In all the retellings. But this is like, this guy's been in the ground for however long and he's decaying in front of you. And to the point where out of his skull, a little mouse pops out.
Jeez.
It's intense. I mean, it's still intense for today, for compared to today's stuff and as an adult. And I think that's what helps it just have that that real gravity feeling to it.
Wow. So much like Eight Crazy Nights, I think I've only ever seen this movie one time. And I really shouldn't even count that as a viewing because this goes back to when I was a kid. And I'm pretty sure the only time it was ever on in my presence, it was just kind of some of the adults might have been watching it. But to me, it was just on in the background as I was doing my own thing.
Right.
So really, it's almost as if I've never seen this movie, which is really an oversight on my part. Because, again, you're doing a good job as a spokesperson selling it to me. But also just generally speaking, it just seems like all of the components and ingredients of something that I would like are there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you have to see it and it throws a lot at you. But the effects, I think, are a very key part of this movie.
Right.
On to number two.
All right. So I'm up again. The first selection for number two for me is a movie that was made on just a $6 million budget.
Ooh.
Produced by Touchstone in 1988, and this is Ernest Saves Christmas.
Hey, Vern, you've got to see my new holiday movie. It's called Ernest Saves Christmas. It's a great movie, Vern, and it's all about how I helped Santa out of this tough jam, and I had to drive the sleigh with all the reindeer. Let's see, there was Donner and Blitzen and Comet and Shorty and Lance and Doc and Sneezy. And Vern, those reindeer made one heck of a mess.
Uh-huh. Ernest Saves Christmas, rated PG. Now playing at a theater near you, check newspaper for showtime.
Not something that would stick out to most people as a special effects extravaganza, and it really isn't that. But when they utilize special effects, considering the budget of the time, of that time, it's done really effectively. Really, 1988 is pretty early in the Ernest canon, so to speak.
Yeah.
So he hadn't quite reached his peak. So for the movie to look as good as it does, I think speaks well to the people, the filmmakers. It was hard to nail down who was responsible for the effects of this movie. There didn't seem to be a particular studio or company contracted to do it. I did find two names. Carolyn Soper was the visual effects coordinator, and Mike Wiesner was the special effects coordinator. So good on them. There are several memorable scenes from a vertical sort of a almost a vertical landing, or doesn't really land, it just hovers vertically Santa's sleigh. And there's also a great scene where the deer, Santa's reindeer, end up in storage at the airport and standing on the ceiling. Now, anybody with any common sense can tell you how they pulled off that effect, but nevertheless,
right,
it looks great. And so that movie always, to me, I like a bunch of the Ernest movies. They are silly and ridiculous. I like them anyway. Sue me. This one, to me, has that vibe that it kind of punches above its weight a little bit. So I give all the credit in the world to the filmmakers, especially this early stage of the Ernest curve.
Yeah. Plus you have, I mean, the greatest special effect of all, the one man special effect, Jim Barney, who's kind of, he's carrying a lot of weight in this movie too.
Absolutely. And a man who's overlooked and not appreciated enough for doing basically what Jim Carrey made a career out of.
Yeah, great point. The original rubber-faced Jim.
That's right, yes.
I think that, well, we were saying with the deer scene, sometimes the simplest effects are the best anyway, but I think that's such a cool scene because it seems like such a no-brainer aspect of the Santa lore that, you know, they're flying reindeer, you know? Why wouldn't you see that more often? But this is really the only movie I can think of that even attempts something like that.
Yeah, you're right. I can't think of anything either. It's so obvious, and yet it's kind of slipped by almost anybody who would have had an opportunity to present something like that.
Yeah.
Back to you.
At number two for me is also a lower budget movie, the lowest budget on my list, coming in at $3.3 million. Half the budget of Ernest. A movie released in 1983, originally by MGM, but Warner Brothers owns the shit out of it now. A Christmas Story.
MGM presents A Christmas Story.
Perfect. Uncle. Uncle.
Come on. The movie that sends up Santa Claus.
Ho, ho, ho.
Christmas Story, rated PG. Starts Friday at a theater near you.
Oh, yeah.
And I say that about Warner Brothers because, as everybody knows, you probably came to know about this movie through the legendary 24-hour repeat viewings every year on TNT. And this is, I think, far from what anybody would consider an effects movie by any stretch. However, there is one moment in this movie that stands out for me as like the best execution of this moment in any movie. And that is the scene where the character Flick, played by Scott Schwartz, gets his tongue stuck to the flagpole outside.
Of course.
I mean, look at it. It's great. Like, you see that, and you see in Dumb and Dumber, they do the same kind of gag, but it's very clearly a fake rubber tongue, you know, and that's almost for a cartoonish exaggeration. But this is this kid's real tongue. I mean, there's no, it's not a prosthetic. Yesterday or recently, I watched a documentary about A Christmas Story just because I didn't want to watch the movie because I just can't, after those 24-hour viewings, I just can't do it anymore. But I'm always down for, you know, a look behind the scenes and some of the minutiae involved in it.
Of course.
And so there was a couple, and it's a pretty low budget documentary, but it's on Amazon Prime. It's a couple from the Ontario area where a lot of the movie was shot, and they take you around to like the shooting locations and talk about some of the things that went into making it. And they go to the school where, you know, they shot this scene and kind of recreate that moment, and it's it's so obvious and so simple, but so effective. And I'm almost mad that I know it now. And sorry in advance for anybody who doesn't want to know, but they just run a tube up
behind the curtain.
They run an air tube up the fake pole and just suction his tongue into it.
Yep, and little hole in the side.
It's so obvious and so deceptively simple, but it just looks so great on screen.
Yep. And then he doesn't have to hold, like, squeeze down on a fake thing with his teeth.
Right.
So he can open his mouth.
Yeah, he's really fighting against it, and he's able to talk, you know, like you would if you had your tongue stuck.
Right, right. So it looks great. And, yeah, this the same secret was just revealed to me only days ago, as a matter of fact.
Huh.
I was watching a show called Josh Gates Tonight, and on the show he interviewed – Josh Gates interviewed Peter Billingsley, and he who, of course, he plays Ralphie in A Christmas Story, and he spilled the beans on how it was done.
Yeah, look at the timing of the zeitgeist, I guess. I mean, it is
– The world wanted us to know. The universe needed us to know.
Too true. Well, since there is no – formal number one on your end, I guess I'm going to continue rambling on with
take over
what I consider my number one, but it's mostly for the entirety of the movie. It's an effects heavy movie, and there are certain ones that stand out, but this is a movie from 1985 with a sizable budget of $50 million, released by TriStar Pictures, Santa Claus the Movie.
Long ago, in a faraway land of ice and snow, the legend was born and the magic became real.
I'm an elf! An elf! Yes!
For everyone who believes in him, and for everyone who wants to, Alexander Salkind presents Dudley Moore, John Lithgow, in the movie with the whole legend, the whole adventure, and the magical wonder of Santa Claus the Movie. Seeing is believing. An Alexander and Ilya Salkind production. Rated PG. Starts Wednesday.
Now, I've definitely talked about this on podcasts past. I'm always happy to sing the praises of this movie. But I can't, I mean, it was the first thing that came to my brain when thinking of special effects and Christmas movies together. And it's because that this movie is, you know, again, I saw it as a kid, and I think it helps when you see things like this as a child, in terms of your ability to buy in.
Right.
But I think this movie is especially appealing and cool and attractive for me is because it treats the idea and the mythology of Santa Claus as a superhero origin story. And I mean, isn't that exactly what Santa is essentially when you boil it all down, is a superhero?
Right.
I mean, he's got powers, he's got, you know, it's all these things that no mere mortal can do.
On last year's Christmas episode, we talked about Christmas crossovers. And one of the things I said I would like to see is the story of Santa Claus told through the lens of a Jack Kirby.
Right.
To Santa Claus into a comic book character, story, origin, etc. So, yeah, this obviously fits right into that.
Yeah, this is probably the next step. It doesn't delve totally into a comic book world, but I mean, it treats it, it's no accident it treats Santa this way, because it's the same producers as the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, the same director as the Supergirl movie from the year previous to this, and it's a lot of the same crew as on the Superman movies. So they kind of take the same. I mean, it's the title is even the same: Santa Claus the Movie, Superman the Movie. It's
right.
It's kind of the same approach, and it worked very well for the first Superman movie, and it works very well here, I think, because it allows you to buy in. It treats it seriously. It treats it as this big, like, momentous thing, and you know, a character like Santa Claus that can do all the things and has this omniscience. I mean, you would expect there to be a bit of production put into how he came to be. And this gives you that.
It's true. When you look at sort of what, you know, Santa Claus is capable of in the lore of the character, you would expect maybe a little bit more grandiosity. And a lot of times he's just kind of, you know, the jolly old elf from the old rhyme, a plump, pleasant, you know, rosy-cheeked old man.
Yeah.
But I think maybe there's some room for something a little bit bigger and grander than that. And I think that's starting to come around, actually. You know, the character, and again, I'm guilty of having not seen Santa Claus the Movie, and I'm sure I said the same thing the last time you talked about it on the show, which is I'm going to. So I'm guilty of the age-old sin of saying, oh yeah, I'm going to check that out, and never getting around to it. But I will say that the way he's played as a character by Kurt Russell in the Christmas Chronicles movie, while smaller movies, I'm sure, is as a much kind of cooler, more capable character than just this sort of plump, silly, you know, like I said before, the jolly old elf of the 'Twas the Night Before Christmas rhyme.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of parallels between these modern Kurt Russell Santa Claus movies and this movie. You could almost view it, this Santa Claus movie, as kind of a prototype for that. It doesn't have the same sensibility, the comedy and the approach, you know, the charisma of Kurt Russell, right, as you mentioned, but there's a lot of parallels, I think.
Yeah.
As far as what effects stand out for me, I mean, it's kind of the same thing as the Superman movies. Like, the flying scenes are really good. They don't age amazingly well, but within the context of the whole production and the seriousness that everybody else is buying into it, it still works pretty well for me, I think.
Sure.
There's a magic candy canes that allow people to fly that they end up using as a fuel source. It's just creative, and I can't recommend it enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, once again, I say I'm going to get around to watching this one. If I don't watch it by next year's Christmas episode, I don't know. Well, maybe we'll have to change my name to something a little bit more embarrassing and disappointing Jamie.
Here once again with disappointing Jamie. Yeah, has a nice ring to it.
All right.
See you next year. All right. Well, that is going to bring both 3-2-1 Pop and part one of this episode to a close. Merry Christmas, everybody. For disappointing Jamie, I have been your friend Claude. Catch up with us soon in part two for more holiday fun.